Okay, yes. So this is about neutron scattering measurements on LSTO, two different dopings, and in particular, I shall talk about measurements that probe the components out of the copper oxide plane. So this is a list of collaborators: Kim Leffman from WISU, Deeb in the audience, and Des, Niels and Henrik from the Paul Scherrer Institute, Peter Vodovich and Peter Schmeidel from the Hahnemeyer Institute, where the measurements took place, Christopher Grohn in Japan, and Nigel Hussey did resistivity measurements. So I've got an introduction. I don't know how much of this to go through, but this is the structure of the material, the on-doped parent compound. It's a two-dimensional antiferromagnet. It has a nail temperature of 325 Kelvin. And as is common for two-dimensional systems, only 50% of the spin moment orders. That's only 50% of each spin points in the ordering direction, which is given by these arrows here. These are the copper atoms. These arrows give the spin moment direction. And this would be one layer, this would be another layer, that would be the next layer. And that results in a Bragg peak when you do neutron scattering, when you go into reciprocal space, at a half-half position. Now, when you start doping with strontium, you distort the magnetism as well. And for low dopings, you get this diagonal incommensurate magnetic order, where the original peak splits into four. And then for higher dopings, the dopings that lead to superconductivity, you get the parallel incommensurate magnetism, actually it's commensurate for some dopings. And so again, it's split into four, but shifted round by 45 degrees. It turns out that there are two regimes for the magnetism within the superconducting region. There's the underdoped regime, which is 6 to 12% strontium doping, where you get long-range magnetic order at these peak positions, at these positions. But if you dope more, so you go overdoped, that's above 0.12, then you just have magnetic fluctuations. Now, when you put a field on, it behaves like a type 2 superconductor. So you get vortices. And here is the reciprocal space for the two-dimensional layers for a doping, I think, of 0.16. These are the magnetic Bragg peaks. And then the little spots give the vortex reciprocal lattice, which is now thought to be a square lattice, at least for low fields. And the pair coherence length is often used as the size of the vortex vortex core, and that's 20 angstroms. So the size of the vortex cores is much smaller than the incommensurate magnetism distance. So I'm going to talk about neutron scattering, and neutron scattering allows you to probe the magnetism. So the neutron has spin half, and then you can probe the magnetic order and also the magnetic fluctuations. So the outline of the talk is looking at the effects of magnetic field. And the reason for doing this is that magnetic field suppresses the superconductivity. And it suppresses superconductivity within the vortex cores. So we can learn something about that suppressed state. And we can learn something about the state that might have existed if superconductivity hadn't intervened. And I can talk briefly about the overdoped system. This was a x equals 0.16 doping, or actually it's optimally doped. And this material just has magnetic fluctuations in zero field. And talk about applying a field and how that changes those fluctuations. Then I go to the underdoped system, that's 0.1. And the magnetic field, this material has long-range magnetic order, and it's looking at the effect of the field on that. And then the new the new work is really in looking at the effect of the magnetic field, but now probing both within the plane and also perpendicular to the plane, so you're measuring the correlations between the copper oxide layers. So first of all, the optimally doped system, 0.16, which has a TCU of 38 Kelvin and an upper critical field of 62 Tesla.
How is the upper critical field determined? 62
Tesla? The magneto resistance measurement.
Is it pulse field?
Pulse field, yes. So this is some data in zero field. This is wave vector and energy. And then blue is background, red is high signal. And the wave vector here corresponds to a wave vector through two of the peaks, which is this green line. And this measurement shows the normal state. So here you have these two streaks, which correspond to these two peaks, and you see those streaks for all energies. When you cool the material down, there's a loss of spectral weight in this region. So here is the low temperature data, and now there's a loss of spectral weight, which shows that a spin gap has formed. And there's also a slight enhancement of spectral weight above the spin gap. So that was all zero field. The next thing was to look at the effect of a field. So taking this plot again, the low temperature data, and taking a scan now, going through one of the peaks as a function of energy. This shows energy and intensity. And red is the data measured in the superconducting state. And here you see there's no signal at low energies. That's because of your below the spin gap energy, and then there's enhancement of signal at higher energies. Then when you put on the field, you get the blue data, which shows that there's now signal appearing within the field. And in fact, you can get the resultant signal by subtracting the infield data from the zero field data, and you get this mode within the spin gap, or extra intensity. And another way to examine this field-induced magnetism is to look here at a scan through two peaks, but at an energy that's below the spin gap energy. So below the spin gap energy, if you scan at 2.5 MeV through the two peak positions, there's no signal. But if you then apply a field, you recover some of the signal. And one of the most interesting things about this data set is actually its temperature dependence. So here is the data collected below the spin gap energy at a temperature, as a functional temperature, first in zero field. So here you're below the spin gap energy, and as you heat up, you regain the normal state signal. If you repeat that in a field, you start cooling down. In fact, you get lingering magnetism at temperatures below TC, which is 38 Kelvin, and here you can compare it to the magnetic, the phase diagram of temperature and magnetic field, where this line gives the separation between the superconducting state and the vortex fluid state. And then you cool down further, and then there's a sudden drop in intensity. And this corresponds to the irreversible temperature, or the temperature of vortex freezing. And I just want to show some other samples, or compare our work to some other samples. Here is our data showing the energy scan, the wave vector scan, and the temperature scan. This is data of Rafael Gilardi, showing also an energy scan. They see a spin gap, and then they see some intensity within the spin gap when they put the field on. So this is with 5 Tesla. They have the wave vector scan, which shows, I think this one is actually normal state, but if you look at the dark colors, one of the triangles is low temperature, And this one is done, this one is low temperature, zero field, and this one is done in field, and there's a small amount of extra signal. And they also see this correspondence to the irreversibility temperature.
What happens at about 10 Kelvin? You said 19 is the where it's freezing?
Yes.
What is the light there upturned? It's 10?
Well, that's where most of the measurements were made. For example, 10 Kelvin is also where this measurement, 6 Kelvin actually, is where this measurement was made. So that's where you really get the enhancement of signal. And you get this rising susceptibility below the irreversibility temperature. But if you think about, the next thing I'll talk about is the Onderdoped system where you have long range order and then you put a field on and you enhance that order. And this is like that rising susceptibility that you get, the sort of tendency towards long range order coming in. And there's more data for x equals 0.18 by Tranquada, and it also sees subgap signal, some field-induced enhancement, and a temperature dependence which shows filling in. So now I'm going to talk about the underdoped LSCO and the comparison to the optimally doped material. So this one has a doping of 0.1, a transition temperature of 29 Kelvin, and an upper critical field of 45 Tesla. And in this material, you get long-range magnetic order. So what I'm going to talk about is the effect of fields on that long-range order. So in zero field, there is a small signal if you cool below TC. So blue here is the measurement in the normal state, and red is the measurement in the superconducting state in zero field. When you apply a field to the system, then you still get a zero signal in the normal state, but you get a fractal-free enhancement in the superconducting state. And what's interesting about this is that the correlation length, this is the in-plane correlation length of the signal, is resolution limited, so it's greater than 400 angstroms, both in zero field and in an applied field. And then you can compare the data to the resistivity. So this is resistivity is a function of field and temperature. And this is the magnetic moment as a function of temperature and magnetic field. So at TC, you go into the zero resistance state, which is colored blue. And you see if you go at higher temperatures, if you go above this irreversibility line, you get enhanced resistivity. If you can then compare this to the ordered moment. So for whatever field is applied to the system, the enhancement of the ordered moment appears at the TC. So that's where the first contour is. And then the lower the temperature and the higher the field, the greater the size of the ordered moment. And one interesting thing to point out is that if you take some field like 4 Tesla and you start cooling your system down, first you get an ordered moment appearing and reaching quite a high value. And then at a lower temperature, you achieve phase coherent superconductivity. So the phase coherent superconductivity occurs within the magnetically ordered state.
Can I just ask a really nice question here? Why are your units mu bore squared?
Because you're measuring a Bragg peak, and Bragg peaks are proportional to mu b squared.
So how would I change, how would I convert that to a magnitude at the moment?
Just square root it.
So you're telling me that the moment is 0.64?
At the
highest part there.
Yeah. Yeah.
which is more.
No, it's not 0.6. It's 0.36.
Oh, sorry. Square root of 0.3. Square root. Yes. Okay. Sorry.
But it's large. Yeah.
My order is zero. So you said blue is orders, right? And blue is also zero.
Okay. In this plot, blue is zero resistance, and this one, blue is zero moment. So order is red. This is elastic. Yes. You get static magnetism below 0.12 dipping. Yes.
Is the one that should going to pay the invasion and be quite with energy?
Sorry?
Is this other dimensional peaks going to pay?
No, I don't think they do. No, not at all. Not at, certainly not at this doping. They start. If you.
Is this the one that John Hancock is talking about?
Oh, okay, at very high energies, yes. At very high energies, there's some debate, and some data shows the peaks will change. But at any energies that I'm showing, they're parallel to the axis, to the trigonal axis. So if you go here, this is 0.125. Any doping below that has some static magnetism. The incommensurate wave vector can change, but there's some static magnetism. And for dopings between for sort of 0.12 to 0.05, they are it's incommensurate parallel to the axes. And then if you go into this green part, it's diagonal, and then it's commensurate. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. The MUD plot gives the incommensurability, but it doesn't talk about the size of the ordered moment. But there's ordered moment all the way to 0.125.
I'm just surprised it stayed before it was
Can you show the graph of what you're showing, Sasha? Yes, the wave vector, this H is not the field, is it?
Oh, no, sorry. It's reciprocal lattice unit. It's this wave vector here, this change in wave vector, is this path here, the one that keeps.
How can we be sure that the moment
We don't know that because the neutrons measure an average.
We have a very sharp peak
which suggests. Well, we have a very sharp peak which suggests that there's long-range order, so it suggests that the magnetic patches are large. But we don't know how even that magnetism is. So it's an average value.
Could I have one more look at your contour plots? I always trouble with these kinds of color coding plots. So if I look at the lower one, does it mean if I would draw the irreversibility line into that plot?
Yes.
It tells me that there is no correlation whatsoever between the magnetic moment that you see and the irreversibility line.
That's what appears, yes. There's no correlation. So the magnetic moment always appears at TC.
It scales.
And the irreversibility line does this.
Right. And the scale is also different because the upper one goes until 9 while the
That's
lower.
Right, yeah.
So, so there's no correlation.
That's right, there's no correlation. So for example, you can start cooling a sample if you're at 4 Tesla, so the irreversible temperature is something like 14. You start cooling a sample, then you get magnetic moment appearing, and then it reaches almost its maximum, and then you get phase coherent superconductivity.
Also, if I would draw, say, like 1B cuts through this figure, so not a color
I've got 1D cuts like this.
Oh, okay.
So here, this is then temperature and order of moment, except. So first of all, this is in zero field, the size of the order of moment in zero field. And then the other colors are for different fields, and they're the ordered moment minus the zero field moment. So what we're doing really is assuming that the two types of magnetism are different. So if you subtract this from the 15 Tesla data, you get this. And then this follows the mean field curve. And then, if you remember that you go to 15 Tesla, we don't have 15 Tesla here, but say if you go to 5 Tesla, irreversible temperature is perhaps 12. So here, you've got phase coherent superconductivity occurring about this temperature at this point on the graph. And what this shows is that the higher the field you apply, the larger the moment. But in each case, the onset temperature is about TC. And in each case, the curve is similar and has a mean field curve.
What is the moment button? What is the moment button dependent on the word moment?
In general, the size of the order moment increases as you go on the dose. But there's certain special dopings like 0.12 where it's particularly large and anomalously large. But in general, the size of the moment increases if you go on the dose.
You said that the size or correlation length of the patch is about 400 angstroms.
That's right.
Which means that they start overlapping from different vortices of the field of less than a Tesla. Right? If I just do a simple minded estimate of one flux quantum.
Yes.
So at 5 or 10 Tesla, there is a very strong overlap between these things. So how should I think about this increase in the ordered moment? It's an increase within this course, just amplitude increases everywhere as you increase the field? Because I can't think about just the area which is covered by the ordered moment.
Well, what we think it is that there's an increase in the correlation between the layers. I'll talk about that. And the last graph here is to look at to show the field dependence of the ordered moment and show that it follows this where it increases a lot for small fields and then levels off, and that follows the term of Demner, Sach, Deff, and Zhang. And I'll compare to other samples. So this is our own data, but it's similar to other people's data. So this is our data, the wave vector dependence, the temperature dependence, and the field dependence. But Catano has also measured it in 0.12 and shows the wave vector dependence and it's been measured by Tykovich and co-workers showing the similar wave-dependent, temperature-dependent, also showing the mean field type curve and field dependence, which they also fit to the Sachdev, Dem, and Zhang term. Okay, so magnetic field induces or enhances long-range magnetic order. The order has a correlation length of 400, greater than 400 angstroms in both zero and applied fields, which is greater than separation of vortices in for most fields. And the size of the moment is large, 0.27 of a Bohr magneton for a field of 14.5 Tesla. And it appears that the temperature dependence of the signal is different in zero field than it is in a field. And the field-induced signal onsets at the transition temperature and doesn't show any sign or any association with the irreversibility temperature. And the results suggest that for fields greater than HC2, the system is an antiferromagnet. Now, I showed some other data measured by other people in different samples of different dopings, but now I'm going to show two sets of data, this data I've just talked about, and another sample. These are both the same dopings, and they're both grown by the same crystal grower. So this is the temperature dependence of the magnetic signal for different fields. And this shows it just for one field of 5 Tesla in a different sample, but with the same doping and grown by the same crystal grower. And already there's a difference in the zero field signal. In fact, we don't know if this signal is magnetic because it's present at high temperatures. But certainly there's no signature of either TC or the irreversibility temperature. So what this suggests is that in zero field, the zero field signal can vary from one sample to another. And also this gradual curve suggests a defect-related magnetism or type of order coming in. And it's very different from the signature of the field-induced signal. However, if you compare the field-induced signal for the two samples, sample B has a very similar type of shape as sample A. So the field-induced signal, what this suggests is the field-induced signal is extrinsic, while the zero field signal is intrinsic or sample dependent. Sorry? Well, I don't know that, but the correlation length is greater than the correlation length is greater than the resolution. So even zero field, we can't even know what it is. It may be still changing.
And do you know what disorder is causing that? Is it zinc or something really extrinsic or more like doping?
It might be something between the layers. I'll talk a bit more about that. So anyway, the next thing is the effect of changing the direction of the field on the field-induced signal. So this is the usual plot through one of the peaks. Well, because it's different from one sample to another, and the defects can change from one sample to another.
There should be some self-averaging, right? So, the samples are dramatically different. Why, let's say.
Well, they do seem to be really quite different, yes.
You mean the irresistivities are different? Or?
No, just the magnetism, the residual magnetism.
So, the residual resistivity is the same?
I think so, yes. Oh, I don't know. I think if you measured the resistivity or measure TC, that would be the same.
Yes, it would be very surprising. I mean, correlation of those defects, because since you're saying that the correlation length is 400 angstroms, that would imply that the defects are orders on the length scale, which are 4. The correlation length between the defects is also comparable larger than 400 angstroms, which is used.
Yeah, but, well, there is something it changes from one sample to the other. The zero field magnetism is different from one sample to the other, whereas the field-induced magnetism isn't. I don't know why that would be, if it wasn't something to do with disorder.
If one wants to answer the question of whether this is local action is on product or it's natural, I think the answer is that it's both. So if you compare this to something by the other side,
we haven't done that, no. Well, okay, I just want to say one thing. The other reason why, this type of magnetic order that you get, which is just slowly rising and doesn't have an obvious transition, also implies rising susceptibility due to something that's disordered. Yes. Okay. This shows, this is about the effect of changing the direction of the field on the field-induced signal. So in this plot, the light blue is measured in zero field, and there's very little signal here. The red is measured with a field applied perpendicular to the copper oxide plane, which is the direction of the field that everyone has been applying so far. And that shows this large enhancement that's been seen before. And then the blue is for the field applied almost within the copper oxide plane. And here, the enhancement is much smaller. So there's a dependence on the field direction that's quite important. And in fact, if you take, we couldn't actually apply the field completely within the copper oxide plane. It had a small component of 11 degrees out of the plane, and that made a component of field of 1.2 tesla pointing perpendicular to the layers, and a component of 5.9 pointing parallel to the layers. And if you take that component of 1.2 tesla and compare it to the already known field dependence and read off for 1.2 tesla, you get about 6 counts, which is what was measured. So that suggests that component, the small component of out-of-plane field, accounts for all the signal that we're observing for that field direction. So there's an anisotropy in the field effect, and this reflects the anisotropies that you see in other properties. So in magnetoresistance, there's an anisotropy in the normal state resistivity of rho C to rho A, B, of rho out of plane to rho in plane of the order of 2,000. And the superconducting coherence length is also larger in the plane than is between the planes. And the London penetration depths also have an anisotropy. So the field effect is reflecting these anisotropies. Now, there is, however, no anisotropy in something that measures the spin susceptibility, such as NMR. So what this suggests is that the field is coupling to the motion of the electrons rather than directly to their spins. So we're not seeing a Zeeman splitting or a splitting of some mode. We're seeing a direct coupling of the magnetic field to the electron system. So next I'm going to talk about probing the magnetism for wave vectors out of the copper oxide layer. Now, these measurements were difficult because you have to use a horizontal magnet, and a horizontal magnet only has a few windows, and then that restricts where you can look. So this is a reciprocal space that could be observed. This is a wave vector within the copper oxide layers, and this is a wave vector, the wave vector perpendicular to the layers. And these give the Bragg peaks, nuclear Bragg peaks, and these red loops show where you can actually access. So it turned out with this magnet, the only place we could access was around about four within this loop here, or within this loop here. So around about outer plane wave vector of four and in plane wave vector of one. But that should be equivalent by translational reciprocal lattice vector to previous measurements. And also on here is these blue rods show the positions of the incommensurate peaks, and it shows them to be rods going along the c-axis. So this is the data, first of all, for sample A, and measuring around about H wave vector 1, and out-of-plane wave vector was, in this case, it was 4. So here in the normal state, and in zero field, which is light blue, there's no peak. Then you cool down the sample, and there's possibly a small peak. And then you put on the field, and now you get the full peak. But that was at L equals 4, and L equals 4 corresponds by translation of reciprocal lattice vector to L equals 0, where all the other measurements have been made. So that should be equivalent and does look similar to the other measurements. Now, if you measure with a finite component of out-of-plane wave vector, so now at L equals 3.5, so delta L is now 0.4, there's a different story. So now there's a bit of signal in the normal state. There's more signal when you cool down to the superconducting state, and then you apply the field, and there is no enhancement. So the enhancement seems to occur at the reciprocal lattice point. And this is another sample. Dark blue is measurement in the superconducting state, and there's a small peak. And you cool that, and then you apply a field, and you get a large enhancement. And that is at the reciprocal lattice point. But if you go away from the reciprocal lattice point to 3.6, so 0.4 in delta L, there's in fact no net enhancement. So the story is that the enhancement seems to occur at the reciprocal lattice point, but not away from the reciprocal lattice point. Regardless of samples, and samples are different, clearly, the enhancement appears, the difference between dark blue and red is large at the reciprocal lattice point, but not sort of around zero at away from the reciprocal lattice point. Same crystal grower, same voting, apparently.
So,
no, they're not. They're not the same. Yes, number two, sorry. So now this is plotting, this is the in-plane wave vector and the incommensurate peak occurs at 1.2. And so you get red, which is high intensity occurring here. And then this wave vector is the out-of-plane direction of the c-axis wave vector. So in zero field, or first of all here, in the normal state in zero field, there's just a little bit of signal. Then you cool down into the superconducting state, and you get a streak. And streaks seem to have a minimum at the reciprocal lattice point 4, but otherwise it's fairly flat. And then you apply a field, 6 Tesla, and the hole fills in with a probably extra intensity occurring above the rest. So in fact, I'll show that to you later, the actual amplitude plot. So for this sample, it's apparently two-dimensional or quasi-two-dimensional in the superconducting state, and when you apply a field, there's extra intensity occurring at the reciprocal lattice point.
Quick question. You showed us at 3.6, and then indeed if I look at the left panel, the sort of sample A, top and middle one, there seems to be very little change. But if I go lower, about 3.4, there is something that looks like there is a splitting of this thing. Any comment on that?
I don't think that's a real effect. I mean, you've seen the data. The data is hard to collect. The counter statistics aren't as good as we'd like them. And so that's probably just a statistical thing. So this is sample B. This is the data collected in the superconducting state, but with zero field. And again, you get a streak. Then you apply the field, and now you get extra intensity occurring at the reciprocal lattice point. So the zero field magnetism is quasi two-dimensional, and field-induced magnetism seems to be quasi three-dimensional. So this shows the amplitudes, the fitted amplitudes for the data plotted for different values of out-of-plane wave vector. And sample A, in normal state, there's a little bit of signal. In the superconducting state, there's some signal shows a minimum at the reciprocal lattice point. This fills in when you put the field on. And then you can get the field-induced signal looking like this. Sample B, it's basically flat in the superconducting state in zero field. But when the field is applied, there's a big enhancement at the reciprocal lattice point. Nevertheless, when you do the subtraction, so you take the infield data minus the zero field data, and you compare the two samples, they are very similar. I think so, yes. Yeah. I think you need to line up the vortex cores. And I don't think they include that. Well, you would think so, but there's no connection to the irreversibility line. In fact, the magnetism sets in at the TC, and really can be quite large before you get to the irreversible. So you start cooling down, you get long-range magnetic order establishing itself, and then you go through this irreversibility temperature, but there's no obvious sign of it in the data. Well, I don't know. Perhaps the theory should answer that. I don't know.
The theory is that equals zero. I guess if you're making simplest assumptions for 3D extension, it will exactly be the same for
simplest assumption meaning what?
It is.
Meaning what? Real 3D order? Just.
But what you would like to know is whether you need the assumption that the vortices are aligned in C direction. And I guess you don't need it.
Well,
you need magnetic coupling, but you don't need vortices to be aligned.
For QZ dependence,
it's not supposed to work, strictly speaking, in their theory, because you're always measuring at finite temperature, which is no longer shorter, which is assumed in the theory. In
so I'm assuming, say it's huge.
So in the first time, 3D, so you can introduce some little coupling in the C direction. The principle should validate this more their theory as opposed to the rest of the thing.
But the question is, why does the coupling come in when you have vortices?
Magnetic coupling can come in for many reasons. Vortices can be vortices.
H log H dependence comes from the superflows. If the vortices are shuffled around,
then you have going to be a random transform in
QZ direction.
With QZ direction, I don't think this superflow is related to the direction of the magnetic moment. The vortex superflow, which is local, tells you the magnitude, which is, I'm pretty sure, how the H log H term comes in.
H log H is a single vortex result.
Exactly.
And that when you start taking them together, the immediate balance, say, imaginary, I start with a
set of
planes where I told
you. So we know that the planes are, if you just take a correlation length from this, the layers are correlated, there are six layers are correlated. So the magnetism is stacked over six, or is correlated over six layers. So the magnetism has to be stacked over six layers.
Intrinsic magnetism, which is a zero field.
It doesn't, well, no. I don't think it really begins at TC and it varies from one sample to the other. I think more often than not it does begin at TC, but there's no.
This mean field length that increases is really only for it's a pointing for normalized energy.
Yep.
That's out the zero field
component. Yes.
So the enhancements, magnetic field enhancements only occurs when it starts suppressing superconductivity. So if you don't have superconductivity, there's nothing to suppress, therefore. There's no enhancements of the moment. But the moment can, by itself can exist at higher temperatures. Is that correct?
I think there's samples where the moment is existed in, at higher temperatures than TC. But the enhancement, when you put the field on, occurs at TC. And it's at that point where you start having, it's that point where you start having coherent vortices. Anyway. What I'd say is that the magnetism is correlated over approximately six layers. And we know that in this material that you get that three-dimensional superconductivity occurs because you get Josephson coupling between the layers. And this is because the interplanar coherence length is so small, it's less than the size of the separation of the layers, so you can only get phase coherent superconductivity by Josephson coupling between layers. And then you must get magnetism by magnetic coupling between layers. And we know that when you put a field on, that coupling extends in about six layers. You know that magnetism is enhanced when you put a field on. Now, that must mean that if you've got a bit of magnetism here, it's directly correlated to the magnetism directly on top of it in the next layer. Now, if we associate that those correlations with the vortices, or those enhanced correlations being connected to the vortices, then that would suggest that the vortices are straight, or at least they're straight over six layers.
I'm not sure I understand the statement, because if I have a 400, if I put the vortex and 400 angstrom around it, it's correlated with wherever, with the vortex, then I can move the second one away within this 400 angstrom, which is a huge distance as far as vortex core goes, and they still be correlated. Mm-hmm. Isn't that?
The phase can change, I mean, because this basically you firm your magnetism by the vortex, and if the vortex core is small, and the principle shifting by two less than some magnetic.
Well, you have 400 angstrom packs that could go correlated.
It's not like commensurate angstrom.
Now we know that there are superconducting regions as well. So you know that there are also superconducting regions, and assuming that there's some sort of phase separation, the superconducting regions do not correspond to the magnetic regions. Then having some correlation that's associated with the vortices, or having some sort of stacking of the magnetism, also means that you would have some sort of stacking of the superconductivity. So it suggests that there's an interplay between the Josephson coupling and the magnetic coupling. And it also turns out that if you look up the energies of these two systems, the Josephson coupling is about 1 microEV, and the magnetic coupling is also 1 microEV. So you can lower it, the magnetism can lower its energy by doing this kind of stacking, and at the same time, the superconducting regions can lower their energy because they will also be forced to stack.
There is a test, presumably, that you can measure the critical current, internally a critical current as a function of the field, right? And that should behave differently depending on whether the vortices are stacked or not. I'm not sure whether this has been done.
Probably one of this is normal.
I don't know, it should be done.
But I think that the question of vortex stacking probably can be answered.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the field, I think.
Okay, and lastly, I can put forward a model. So our model is that in zero fields you have defects. I don't know what these are, but they induce some sort of magnetic order. And if the defects lie between the layers, they induce some sort of order within neighboring layers. You get magnetic patches. And of course, different samples can have different defects, so that's why the magnetism can be different. Now, if I go back here, this was sample A. And sample A had this strange minimum at the reciprocal lattice point. And the only way you can get a minimum is if you've got an odd function. So in real space, the magnetic order is an odd function about some point. And that can give you a minimum at the reciprocal lattice. So let's say the magnetic patches then are an ordered, odd function about some defect layer. So spins go up, up, and then down, down. And you've got these different patches. Now, when you apply a field, and you apply a field along the c-axis, you get vortices along the c-axis. And if these vortices are able to enhance the correlations along the c-axis, you get enhanced magnetic order. And once one patch starts to overlap another patch along the c-axis, you no longer get a minimum at that point. In fact, you get a maximum because now you've got an overall correlation length that's larger than the distance from one patch to the next. And so that model is able to produce the lines that go through this data.
So when the correlation length is large, is it ferromagnetic along the c-axis or independent?
It's within a unit cell, it's ferromagnetic along the c-axis. Okay, so then to conclude, the magnetic correlations are two-dimensional, or approximately two-dimensional, in zero field. And there's a minimum which occurs, well, it's been observed in one sample, that occurs at the reciprocal lattice point. And that suggests that there's some sort of ordering which is an odd function along the c-axis. Putting a magnetic field on enhances the intensity overall, and especially it enhances the intensity at the reciprocal lattice point, suggesting enhanced correlations that extend about 6 layers. And the results imply stacked magnetism and possibly straightening of vortices, which would also then correspond to some straightening of superconducting regions. Thank you.
simple question of the battery. Did anybody try to see that in IPCO?
In IPCO? I don't think they have long range order in IPCO. Sorry?
The origin that you are supposed to bring is really not linked defect for the induced magnetism to the current IPCO as well. No reason not to see that. I mean, that isn't the same thing. You should see that in IPCO.
But I don't think IPCO has long range magnetic order. I don't.
Well, the other thing that might be different is the T prime is different. And T prime frustrates anti-ground magnetism.
Well, as far as the good effect of the
so it doesn't believe in like long range order in zero field or in finite field, because there is no long range order.
Zero field, that's good.
In zero field.
Field.
In finite field, I don't know.
No, that's the question. Did you ever try?
No, I didn't try. No. But, I mean, this model suggests that you need something. This model suggests you need something to enhance. Yeah.
The problem is negative, it's not supported. So, can you even try what you
need for? People have tried.
Yeah.
Which means they didn't see it.
I'm not sure. What is it? In the 214 series, they're much closer to the quantum critical point that allows you to go to the strike phase. And then the stripes are much further away from the Y123 samples than they are from your sample. But the susceptibility, the underlying susceptibility at these wave vectors is.
This is a good point, because the open 12 phase, which is well under the emerging young, is sometimes fed in the interstitial case.
Yeah, because the susceptibility is something like that.
There are always some similarities when you look at all the data that is fed. You always find something strange happening at 12.5. So,
it helps to have a high score. In the standards, actually, any of these theories we talk about that we're accounting for this, one thing that enters is the underlying susceptibility at those particular wave vectors. And that, if that susceptibility is high as it is in this series, you're more likely to have field induced magnetism than if that susceptibility is low.
It's just controlled.
The theory is
this was one of the.
Yeah, but
so the coupling.
There's a coupling constant, which is essentially given by that susceptibility. If it's high, you're more likely to do something with it.
Yeah.
So kind of refining of, is the structure of the thing going on at 5.5, or is it dominantly?
It's all incommensurate. It's all incommensurate. In fact, there's nothing at 5.5.
Well, the question for everybody, because I'm still puzzled with the. It seems to be that the long explanation relies on the fact that you essentially have strange words because they all lock up. Whatever the vortex score that the current is doing, that's how you can get the precision 3D enhancement in this thing. That each plane itself produces a little quantum coupling, you get H log H, but I think magically, in order to get such a long coherent plane, has to walk along the third direction.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very recent, it's like reasonable, but starting from 10. The frequency is actually, unfortunately, reversible, nothing changes, because I thought there were a lot of changes to the vortex structure as you go through the reversibility. And maybe not you, but I don't know. Matthias, maybe you have some comments, because I'm just.
Well, I mean, my theory would actually be that if each single plane at by applying the field produced a nice long range magnetism, of course, that it's. I mean, spatial intensity pattern, of course, depends on where the vortices are as well. Not so intensity will be larger, of course, the vortices will be smaller otherwise. But nevertheless, it has a long range correlate everywhere, so the magnitude is not restricted to the vicinity of the vortices. Then I would say there is no need for having to deal with the vortex because it's correlated between the planes. So there is an interlayer magnetic coupling. If there is nice magnetism everywhere in the plane, even if the intensity is not really homogeneous, you will get nice 3D magnetism. And the fact that nothing changes when you cross your visibility line may be an indication that the vortices are not.
portions of the living line going to be affected by the magnetism, for example?
I don't expect this effect to be weak, if it exists at all.
So does that mean the vortices just are sort of secondary thing that have nothing to do with the...
But we know they...
So then there's some coupling.
So you said that the coupling between the layers is ferromagnetic, right?
Well, I'll show this.
So the order is ferromagnetic.
Well, this is the structure.
That's what you said, right?
Well, that's the structure of the parent compounds.
Yeah.
So it's ferromagnetic from this one to this one, but then you have this layer in the middle.
So the exchange is, so the order between the planes is exactly the same, apart from incommensurability, as it would be in the undoped system, you're saying. I mean, this parent compound then ferromagnetic. Is that the statement?
There's nothing to say it's different.
So it's the same.
Well, I don't know. As far as we measure, it's the same. But I mean, it's incommensurate for one thing. And.
So it's not the same. The parents you have, the end compound, but then when you do this.
No, it isn't. No, because then you get your pika ping somewhere else.
Isn't that all right, though, the extract? Because then within the extract, you've got, local 5-5. And then a phase shift. So you can go perpendicularly. That looks a lot like it. Or within the bundle.
If I look at the inelastic, if you have inelastic spectra, is there any difference between the samples that show elastic ordering or not?
We only measured one sample, unfortunately. So we only measured one. So I'll go back to the 16% sample. Right. We only measured this one. And only, it was an array of samples, actually, but...
You don't have what, lower doping?
Well, these are the other dopings that have been measured by other people. So there are some differences. In general, there's an enhancement, and in general, there's some sort of association when you go inelastic with a loss of signal below the irreversibility line. So we get it here, and the sample, we get it here.
There's nothing at 10% or 12%.
I think there is data at 10%, and I think they see the same thing. They see an association with the irreversibility line again.
What is the direction of the ordered
moment? I think the direction of the ordered moment is the same as in the parent compound, so it's actually collinear and it points along the b-axis in the plane.
In the plane?
Yes.
There's no
We are below the spin flop field, but possibly there's some. No, we're below the spin flop field, so the direction shouldn't change.
So it's the same
thing slightly.
Yes,
I. No, it's in the plane. I'm just going to do it like that. That's not the way it is.